¿Te vendrían bien $300,000 de capital semilla y mentoría de ex ejecutivos de Facebook, Google y Pinterest? En este episodio te contamos cómo The Venture City te puede ayudar. Hoy, por primera vez en la historia, una entrevista en inglés en el Valle de los Tercos. Es que vale la pena escuchar a alguien que estuvo con las startups latinoamericanas desde el inicio.
Who the hell's the gringo? What the hell's this guy doing?
Mike Hennessy empezó a invertir en startups de latinoamericanos en 2010 y conoce a todo el mundo que habla español o portugués en Silicon Valley. Invirtió en grandes éxitos como Corner Shop, pero también nos cuenta las oportunidades enormes que se perdió.
Fuck, did I fuck up? I'm the biggest loser there is. Are you kidding me? Like, most people get one shot at this. I've like pissed away dozens and dozens of these and like, what is wrong with me? How can I be so stupid?
Soy Diego Graglia y con Fernando Franco te traemos el podcast de Silicon Valley en español. Hoy con entrevista en inglés. Fernando,
what's up?
Vamos a romper el protocolo por primera vez en la historia del Valle de los Tercos y vamos a hacer una entrevista en inglés.
Porque para mí Mike es el héroe de estas historias que estamos viendo en los medios. Excelentes noticias, uno de los IPOs en América Latina y las grandes rondas que se están levantando. Y entrevistan siempre a los inversionistas de las series A, las B, las C, las D. Pero nadie habla con los angel investors, los inversionistas ángeles desde el principio, desde el inicio, que creyeron en los emprendedores cuando no tenían números, no tenían usuarios, no tenían ventas, no tenían un culo. Y Mike es de esos inversionistas ángeles. Y no solamente es un inversionista ángel de etapa temprana que ha creído en América Latina, pero lo hizo desde antes del boom. Él lo hizo desde 2011, 2012, 2013, antes de eso incluso, su primera inversión en un emprendedor latinoamericano. Entonces creo que es importante darle visibilidad al personaje o al rol que juega el inversionista ángel en todas estas historias que estamos viendo hoy en día.
Y Mike, la verdad que es un personaje central en la historia de Silicon Valley y Latinoamérica. Conoce a todo el mundo, está conectado con todo el mundo, ha trabajado con muchos. Hace 20 o 30 años que está pateando las calles de Buenos Aires, Santiago, México, Bogotá, lo que quieras, conoce todos los ecosistemas y ha participado en muchas de estas historias, como vos decías, como héroe anónimo. Y espero que no solo nos cuente sus grandes éxitos de la inversión, como haber sido uno de los primeros inversionistas en apoyar a Corner Shop, sino también cuáles fueron sus grandes misses, ¿no? Las que se perdió en tantos años de estar hablando con emprendedores latinoamericanos.
Ok, vámonos. That's what I have to say.
Let's go.
Mike fue el primer director de Puente Labs, la organización que hoy dirige Fernando, pero desde antes había empezado a conectarse en América Latina e invertir en sus startups. La primera inversión que hizo fue para el argentino Diego Bash, que fundó Index Tank y la terminaría vendiendo a LinkedIn.
And so when you said your first deal was in 2010 for a Latin American startup, how was the landscape at that moment? For Latin American startups, looking at it from Silicon Valley, right? Was it super sparse?
Yeah, I just knew Diego from working with him at Inc2Me. So I knew he was smart. And I wasn't really looking in Latin America per se. He was here working in Silicon Valley. And so I think that deal in particular was a little bit different because he was more like an American in terms of sensibility and experience. And the other one that sort of at the same time, right, roughly the same time, was a company called Pulpo Media, which Justin Kuykendall was running. And he and I just got along very well. And I think a lot of this is, I mean, I think you talk about lessons. And one of the things that I realized is you just have to show up. I think a lot of life is just showing up. So I would go to meetups. I would go to Spanish meetups, Latin America. I would go to these Endeavor ISPs. I would go to anything related to Latin America in the Valley or down there that I thought was important. And I would just meet people and just, you know, just be open and curious about what was happening. And so I think that was the start of it. And then that's how I met Justin. And then I spent some time with him, you know, helping him and advising a little bit on some things. He didn't really need my help, to be honest. But then after that, it was, and I distinctly remember it. I don't know exactly when, but I think it was 2009-ish. It was a year before Startup Chile started. So I remember meeting Diego Alucaino in a Starbucks in downtown San Francisco. And he was saying, hey, Chile's doing this thing where we're going to do this startup thing where we're going to invest in companies. And, you know, this was way long ago. So, and then at the same time, it was right around in Mexico where I think it was Cesar and Santi Zavala were doing Mexico VC. So I'd met those guys and I'd spent some time with them. So I flew to Mexico City. I was spending time with them. And the one thing that struck me, Santi said it, he's like, I forget his name, Dave, it was Chris Ye and Dave, I forget the guy's name, he's an American, who was down there coding with them, but he was a superstar coder from Google. And I remember Santi said he was so nervous when they came down, but then after just coding alongside them for like 6 hours or 5 hours, it's like, we're as good as they are. There's no difference between, this is a Google level coder and I'm a guy from Mexico City. And so it was very interesting. And that was right around when 500 Startups was starting to do a little bit more in Latin America. And then the other guys were 21212 out of Brazil. I went to their first demo day. They invited me. So I just flew down to Sao Paulo and just, you know, spent some time meeting with them. So I was just kind of a general nuisance. And I mean, you know how it is in Latin America. You're like, who the hell's the gringo? What the hell's this guy doing? And then they ignore you for a while. And then after a couple of years of just me doing this, they were like, okay, this guy's serious about the market. We like him, or, you know, whatever it is, you know? And so I just started to get to know people, and I'm really grateful to Endeavor. I think Endeavor was a really good launch pad for me because they introduced me to a lot of people that I learned a great deal from. And Dan Green is one. He was an attorney here who you probably know. You know, so he and I flew down to Santiago and did a bunch of meetings. And so, and same in Colombia and Mexico and Uruguay. I just spent a lot of time, you know, learning. And the dirty secret, I would say, is that I was just trying to be helpful at the time. I wasn't specifically looking for allocating capital because I didn't have a fund. So I was just trying to get to learn a little bit about each country and what people are doing. And, you know, we'll get to that. But you know, that's sort of pre Puente Labs. So this was all just learning and talking and trying to be helpful. And then it was when Alex Mendez, who you've had on your podcast, Santi Subotovsky, who you've also had, Ariel Arrieta approached me and said, you know, I think I was their second pick, to be honest. I think they wanted Alan Taylor initially. But they said, hey, Mike, you know, we've seen you around a bunch. We want to do something together. Would you be interested in, you know, sort of helping us create some sort of bridge between Latin America and the U.S.? So that's kind of when that became a little bit more formalized.
So you know how in The Godfather, there's one Irish guy who works with the Italians? Is this the same thing? The Argentinian mafia picked you?
Yeah. It was kind of a funny joke because I would tell, you know, it's like a bad joke, right? A gringo and three Argentines walk into a bar, right? Like everything was, you know, because Santi's Argentine, Ariel was living in Buenos Aires with NXTP, and Alex Mendez obviously was Argentine. So the first thing I did, I was like, wait a minute, guys, this sounds like a really bad joke because everyone's going to think we're just Argentine. And no offense, but it's like that old joke, like how what does an Argentine do when it's thundering and lightning?
You know it?
They look up at the sky because they think God is taking their picture. You know, I mean, so it was kind of like this thing. So I'd go to Chile or I'd go to Mexico or I'd go to Colombia and they're like, wait, this is an Argentine thing. I was like, no. So the first thing I did is, I got Alan Taylor. I was like, Alan, I really need your help. Can you be an advisor to this thing? It didn't even have a name at that point. Then the second guy I called immediately was Ariel Poehler, who I just have so much respect for. That guy has been, he's just an amazing, humble human being. And so, you know, he's from Venezuela. And then the third was Antoine Colasso, who's at Valor Capital. So I got those guys. I was like, okay, now I have a Venezuelan. Now I have a guy who represents Brazil and one for the region. So now we can sort of balance out sort of the 3-to-1 Argentine weight.
And so what was the need that they wanted to address when they decided to launch Puente Labs?
We all had a little bit of a different vantage point. You know, I think Alex Mendez in particular, and he doesn't get enough credit, by the way. That guy is, I think, without Alex, you don't have Latin America in Silicon Valley. Without Alex. And he'd never tell anyone that because he's so humble. Like I remember giving him a microphone once to introduce, you know, self-introduce to a group. We used to host these 300-person parties with DJs on the roof at Galvanize. And Alex would go something like, you know, hi, my name is Alex. I work with a venture firm in the Valley, and I'm happy to, you know, just, and I'm like, come on. I literally had to grab the microphone and be like, come on. The guy was the founder of Stratacom. He came here on his own. He used to build saunas. He created, you know, Storm Ventures, which a lot of people don't know, by the way. Storm was, STRM was the ticker for Stratacom. And Stratacom was acquired by Cisco. And I still think this is true. It was the highest acquisition as a percentage of cash flow that Cisco's ever done. And then he led all of Latin America for, I mean, the guy's amazing and he's just so humble. But I think for him, I think what he wanted to do is genuinely give back. He'd been very successful in life. He wanted to help entrepreneurs from Latin America succeed. I think Ariel Arrieta, from his perspective, wanted a bridge to the Latin, to the Valley so that he could help his companies get a footing if they are growing and getting Series A. I think Santi, I don't know what, you know, he might have been doing like a combination of helping like Alex, but also, you know, always having an eye out for the region and trying to, you know, get emergence capital deal flow. So we all sort of had our own, you know, reasoning for doing it. And we sort of put it all together and, you know, came up with the name Puente Labs. And part of the reason you talk about failure there too, I'll assume full responsibility. I thought it didn't live up to the expectations that we had hoped. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But, you know, I think part of it was just we were early. We were very early on this. You know, I don't remember when we exactly started it. It was probably 2011, somewhere around there. But I think, you know, that timing is a big part of anything. And, you know, we didn't have as much of a focus. Like I was trying to raise a fund, but we were also an accelerator. We were also backed by, you know, Susana Garcia Robles and IMF. And so we were a little bit fragmented vision-wise. And so I mean, that's my fault. You know, I wish if I had to do it again, I would have done a few things differently.
Talking about being too early, which is something that sometimes happens in this world of startups and investing, how do you think things would go if you were to launch like today or a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I mean, there's a great quote I love. It's Reid Hoffman says, it's something like the effect of, it's actually pretty easy to be contrarian, but it's really hard to be contrarian and right. And you know, I interpret that the same way. It's like, you can be right. If you're early, you're still wrong. And I look at that from an investment perspective. So you could buy, you know, the right stock or invest in the right company, but if it's the wrong time, you're still wrong. So it's hard to say. I mean, you know, we can go through some of the early history if you want, but I like to think that I could be very successful today doing this. Maybe 5 years ago or 4 years ago would have been the ideal time. But there are lots of funds that are, you know, stuck through it. You know, Angel Ventures Mexico or Hernan Fernandez is a good example in Mexico who's just tirelessly done it because he was there at the beginning as well doing angel stuff. So I'd like to think that, you know, I could be successful. There's a lot of young guys and women that are doing some great work today. And I'd like to think that maybe I had a part in some of their success and maybe help them along the way. But, you know, I try not to look back too much. I mean, I coulda, shoulda, woulda. I mean, it's instructive. And I think I mentioned this before, but if you look at the anti-portfolio, just in preparation for this podcast, I looked at some of the deals that I passed on as an angel. And actually, I'll pull it up. It's kind of hilarious. I only got 5 or 6 into it, but the money raised by these 5 companies, $3.8 billion, the current market cap valuation of these companies, $18.6 billion. The investment return would have been about 140x. So what are you going to do? Everyone's got a story, right? I mean, if you're not in Silicon Valley, if you're in Silicon Valley for a year or 10 years, you've got the story, right? We've all
the one that got away.
Been there. So I don't know. I mean, that's part of it, right? I mean, you could look at the past and mope and say, I coulda, woulda, shoulda, but you know, that's just the way life is. You know, I mean, you take your shots and sometimes they work out and you know, you can't beat yourself up about things that could have happened in the past.
Can you be more specific about which companies are the ones you passed on?
Oh yeah. So here's a great story. So I don't know why, but I was in New York and these guys knew this was, I think, I don't know the exact year, but these guys were like, hey, we heard you doing some good stuff in Latin America. Oh, this must have been 2015. This is a great story. So meet us at this WeWork, you know, come up to whatever floor. So we go up to the floor. They open. I didn't really know much about it. I was like, okay, whatever. I'll just meet with these guys. So we get on the whiteboard. They start drawing up all of their plans for the, you know, they're working with Corte Inglés. They're like, we have this project. We're getting consulting and we're doing Corte Inglés. So we've got our workflow. So they start talking through the whole thing. Company's name was Grabability because they were grabbing products and they're associating them all through. And then they start going through And then I was like, hey guys, I didn't know about this, but you know, a good practice as an investor is if you're invested in a company that's somewhat competitive, you just tell them. So I was like, guys, I just got to let you know. I don't know if you know this, but I'm an angel investor in a company out called Corner Shop. And their eyes just got really, really big. And like, well, we need to end the meeting right now. The guy gets up, he erases the whiteboard. And I'm like, well, no, I appreciate it. You know, I can try in Chinese wallet if you want. Or so like, no, no, we appreciate your time. Thank you very much. Guess what that company was? Rappi. That was before it was called Rappi. It was a software product that they were building for El Corte Inglés in Spain, having some success with it. And I was literally probably one of the first five people they talked to. And they were going through the schematics on the whiteboard, or you know, so it's just funny, like how I don't think I've even ever told this story before. But then you don't know, right? I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. And I think the lesson there, and this is more, I think, applicable for venture capital firms than angels, but it did happen to me as an angel in this case, is that when you make a bet on a company, you're making a bet on the entire segment and this entire industry, because if another company comes along, you're probably not going to invest in both. You know, if you invested in MySpace, you probably didn't invest in Facebook. And if you invested in Lyft, you probably didn't invest in Uber. So when you're looking at a deal, especially the later stage seed or Series A, I think you have to take a real look at what does the space look like. And again, timing is part of that. I mean, maybe Lyft and Uber came out at the same time, maybe not. But I think that's a good lesson is, you know, when you're making these bets and these investments in these founders, there's a chance someone else will come along later that might, you know, usurp what they've built and build a better mousetrap. So that was a fun one. So that was one. The other one, idiot Mike, is so I was with hanging out with Hernan and Adolfo Babatz, the founder of Clip, having a beer at this place in Mexico City, and this was their angel round. So he was raising like 350K. I had this rule that, you know, I don't do hardware because hardware is too hard. And you know how in Mexico, you've got the different point of sale systems and the different cards. Great founder. He'd worked at PayPal. Great guy. He's like, Mike, come on, just put a little bit of money in. This will be great. I loved him. It's like, you know, I got to stick to my rules. I don't do hardware. I'm sorry. Well, we all know the story. I think their latest valuation is what? 3 billion or 2 billion. Same thing. 350K round. I think the pre-money was definitely less than 10. It might have even been 7. I mean, I could go on like Mural, like, you know, when that company first started, you know, he's looking for a VP of sales. Like, Mike, help me out, be a sales guy. Now they're at, I mean, you know, that was a long haul though. He worked his ass off to get where they are. That's a 2 billion. So, I mean, I don't know. You could go on and on and on and on. I mean, the other one, Auth0, which is hilarious. Now they're 6 billion Okta acquisition. It just goes on.
Can you tell us a few?
So it's a bit bittersweet. Like when I was doing a little research to talk with you guys today, it was part like, God, this is so great. Nostalgia going down, you know, going down the nostalgic route. And the other part of me was, fuck, did I fuck up? I'm the biggest loser there is. Are you kidding me? Like most people get one shot at this. I've like pissed away dozens and dozens of these. And like, what is wrong with me? How can I be so stupid?
Si eres emprendedor o emprendedora y buscas tu primera ronda de financiación, el equipo de The Venture City te puede ayudar. Ellos creen que los buenos emprendedores pueden venir de cualquier lugar y apoyan startups de software en cualquier hub tecnológico emergente. Invierten un mínimo de $100,000 y usan una metodología centrada en el producto como pieza clave para escalar. The Venture City te apoya en producto, crecimiento, ingeniería, datos, estrategia financiera y cultura. Tiene un equipo de fundadores de startups y ex miembros del equipo inicial de grandes compañías tecnológicas, como Facebook, WhatsApp, Google y Pinterest. Si te entusiasma el reto, postúlate al ticket de inversión en theventure.city/tercos. theventure.city/tercos. Seguimos con Mike Hennessy, que después de repasar sus grandes oportunidades perdidas, también nos contó algunas de las inversiones que le salieron muy, muy bien, como la de la startup chilena Corner Shop.
I mean, that's an interesting story, right? So during my trips to Latin America and Chile, you know, I meet Oscar and Danny, I don't know Jacques as well, but I meet Oscar and Danny in a building that they had just moved into. This was, I don't know the year, but they started their first startup, Clan Descuento, and they sold it to Groupon. So they were running at the time all of Latin America for Groupon, and they must have had 200 people in this building, two, three at a desk. It was just total chaos. So I remember I went outside and Oscar and I sat down and with Dan and we just chatted, got to know each other. And so that's when I first met those guys. Then they moved to San Francisco. So obviously, you know, the Chilean community has a nice connection to the Bay Area. So we got to know each other. And then that's when they started their company, Seahorse. And Seahorse was a photo sharing app. And I had no interest in a photo sharing app. You know, Oscar and Danny had just had kids. So they were sharing photos with family. And so I passed on that. But then, you know, Oscar was just relentless, you know. And so then they were winding Seahorse down and they were trying to figure out what to do next. You know, and they were at a shitty little office next to a Chinese restaurant in Union Square. And they just had one wall of four Chilean developers. And it was Danny and Oscar. And I think Jacques was in Santiago at the time. And he's like, well, we need to do something. We got these great developers. We can't let them go. So they literally had no idea what the hell they were doing. And, you know, that's the thing is like, they were great entrepreneurs. They knew how to scale. They know how to run businesses. And I think they realized that. And I think Oscar had that aha moment. He's like, what are we better at than everybody else? Execution. We can hire, we can scale, we can build software. So why don't we just do, you know, like an Instacart in Latin America? And here me, one of my other rules was I don't do copycats. I don't do hardware, you know? So I'm like, no, it's like, no, but the numbers are great because the labor costs are lower. We've got, you know, and so we started talking and, you know, Oscar's an amazing entrepreneur. I mean, that guy is just a dynamo. I mean, he just knows what, you know, he can be a little abrasive sometimes to people that don't understand him. And I think he struggled a little bit early on with fundraising, but he was such a good entrepreneur. You know, it's like, all right, you got me. I wish I would have put more in, obviously. But you got to remember the context at the time was, you know, four developers, an idea. They didn't really have much, right? I mean, at the time I invested, I think maybe they had Santiago. They had nothing in Mexico. They were living here. They were going to build out something in a place where they weren't residing. But, you know, so it's easy to look back now and say, oh, yeah, $3 billion Uber acquisition, everybody knew. But these guys fought tooth and nail. And, you know, it's not obvious. It's easy to use hindsight on these things. But so, you know, their journey themselves, I mean, they almost ran out of money, I don't know, five times, you know, and then it's just the whole serendipity. I was like, guys, you should come down to Galvanize. I kind of created this whole Latin American area. We had this balcony and I brought Oscar and Danny down. I think we had like Pedro Sorrentino was there. Like, so I brought everybody from all of Latin America. I was like, yeah, come sit in this area. We'll all work together. And the serendipity there was all VP. I think it was Fernando who was visiting. He and I had a meeting and I showed him the thing. And as we're walking down the stairs, I was like, you know, you should come up and meet some of these entrepreneurs. So I introduced him to, you know, Oscar, and then they went in for a walk and like an hour and a half later, he's like, wow, that guy's great. And so that's how the connection to their seed investor happened. And then because Oscar lived in Pack Heights here or Knob Hill, I can't remember. He was neighbors with Jackson Square and then Excel. And so they created this whole ecosystem. And then I'll give them a lot of credit. They moved with their families from San Francisco to Mexico City to make this work. And then AllVP was one of their investors that was there at Excel. But even throughout all that, I mean, it was a labor intensive and an expensive OPEX business. You know, they raised, I don't know, $6-9 million and then 20 and then more. And then even when it looked like they were having total success, Walmart acquisition was blocked by the Mexican government. And, you know, I can't go into the details of it all, but their journey was not a straight line. I mean, it reminds me of that book, The Messy Middle. So, but obviously a great outcome, great entrepreneurs. And I think the lesson there is at the early seed stage, you bet on the entrepreneurs more than you do anything else. I think I would probably weight that 70%. Like, are these entrepreneurs, are the men and women building these companies, ones that are able to adapt and pivot and just, you know, make stuff work? And that's kind of what Oscar and Danny were. The other one is CargoX.
I just have to pause you there. Because I just remember vividly the balcony at Galvanize. And that was like the capital of Latin America in Silicon Valley, was that balcony at Galvanize that you were talking about. And that was the shit. Like, everything happened there. It was great.
And it was just organic. And you know, that was by design, too. Like, so the balcony was overlooking the coffee shop, and it was open and it was chaotic. It was the one place. And by the way, Galvanized, I mean, that's another kudos. Like Alan Taylor, you know, I was a mentor to Endeavor, and he's like, hey, we're moving to this new building. I was one of the first 9 people in the building or 9 companies. And I just was, Endeavor had that sort of mojo. And I was like, I want to be around them. And so when we did that, and then it was just perfect for like the Latin American culture, go have a coffee, go out, you know. And so every time there was a Latin person coming in the building, they just wanted to be there because it was like, oh, hey, these guys are from Brazil. They're building some cool stuff. These guys are Chilean. These guys are Mexican. It was awesome. You know, it was so much fun. And, you know, until they sold it to the corporate entity and then they booted us up the stairs, you know. So you guys are Argentine, or 2 of you. You know, in Buenos Aires, you could trace the success of the Argentine entrepreneurs, not to the government, but to Wences, Santi Balinkis, Ariel Arrieta, and there's probably a few, Marcos Galperin. And then, you know, the guy, the offshoot of that, Kasek, you know, you look at, the Globant guys, you know, and you look at Martin Magoya, and then, Marcos Galperin, and then, you know, Hernan, from Kasek and Nicolas Sakazi, and those, you know, those guys, that group of guys created magic in Argentina and magic that got exported here. And it was in spite of the Argentine government, I think, whereas, you know, the Chilean government took a different approach. But, you know, once you had that, magic's hard to capture, and it doesn't last very long. So when you see that either as an entrepreneur or as an investor, you want to be around it. And that's kind of how I felt in the early days at Galvanize, is that there was so much fun and exciting stuff happening. And, you know, it was enjoyable. And it was just a great camaraderie and a great, great place to be.
We are seeing these ecosystems become more solid in the different countries and so on. And in the last couple of years, we started seeing serious rounds that we were not seeing 3-4 years ago. I wonder, from your perspective, does it feel like it was a very long and slow slog to get there?
Well, I started in Chile in 1994, so yes. I'd been waiting. I mean, that's like one thing. It's like, if you want to be an overnight success over 3 decades, I'm your guy. If you want to be an overnight success overnight, I'm not your guy, because I'm way too early on everything. And one of the lessons I learned in life is always leave what I call a long tail. So when I think something's played out, it's you forget. Like I'll use this analogy with crypto. Like, you know, I'm grateful to Wences for introducing me to Bitcoin way back in the day. And you know, they had use for it in Argentina, and he was using it to pay for things. But when you look at, you know, this was 2012, 13, and you the first up and dip, you know, let's say it went up to, I forget what the numbers were, but, you know, went from $100 to $1,200, then it went back way down. The tendency is to think, oh, it's played out. Everybody I know knows about it. Everybody here in Silicon Valley is the one, you forget it's the 1% of the 1%. And so I used to just throw it away and say, okay, what's the next thing? But in every industry, you can kind of see that it's just starting. So there's that early adopter curve. I don't know. I keep this thing around and I actually got it laminated. I don't know if you could see this, but this is that graph of all investment and all, you know, when you talk about the takeoff, the first sell-off, the bear trap, and the new paradigm. Like, and I think what a lot of us in Silicon Valley fail to recognize is there's a whole world out there. Like, there's the Midwest here, there's the East Coast, there's Europe, there's Latin America. And I think the times are getting shorter in between. There used to be a bigger distance. It used to be 12 years behind in Latin America. Now it's probably not even one. It's probably months. And I think what we forget sometimes is there's a whole world that needs to adopt this stuff. And if you look at Facebook's growth, for example, you know, I don't know how many billions of people are on it now, half the world. It takes time to get there. And yes, that time's getting shorter, but so I think the lesson as an investor is just because you're early on something and it maybe isn't happening, stay with it. You know, that's the one thing, you know, and obviously I got aged out a little bit in terms of the venture community for LATAM, but you know, so to answer your question, Diego, you know, if I were 10 years younger, I think I'd be in the middle of this in Latin America. And maybe that's just a lame excuse, but I, you know, venture is a 20, 30 year cycle. And so, you know, I see great things for Latin America. I mean, I really do.
Okay. So one of our favorite questions here is, do you really think that Latin American entrepreneurs have different qualities that they bring to the table? Or after so many years of seeing so many of them, you think it all balances out and entrepreneurs are the same everywhere pretty much?
No, I mean, I think they're, I mean, like one good example is, you know, if you look at WhatsApp, right? Most American investors miss that. Why? Because in the United States, our texts are basically free. They're included unlimited as our plans. So none of my American friends use WhatsApp. Everyone else uses WhatsApp. So we have blind spots. You know, the same thing with crypto, right? We, up until recently, we haven't had a lot of inflation in this country. But if you lived in Brazil or Venezuela or Argentina and you've seen black markets for money, so somebody like that is going to grasp a crypto Bitcoin environment a lot faster than, say, an American. And even today, we see some of the greatest investors in the U.S. are, they're doubtful about it. So I think it just depends on the strength and the regional knowledge of a country. So certain countries have, you know, Israel's a good example that where they've got good security design and cybersecurity. I think Latin America has, you know, a lot of strengths. So I think of it more like, you know, we all have blind spots, and just being aware of what they are is useful in terms of evaluating our own abilities. So I don't necessarily look at it the same way. I think there are some entrepreneurs from Latin America that are world class. I mean, Emiliano Kargaman sending satellites into space, right? You know, he was one of the early proponents and helpers of you know, Puente Labs. And I'd put him up there. I don't even segment it. Like, it's not like there's US only entrepreneurs. And, you know, I mean, I think the data has shown that, you know, a third of all Fortune 500 companies have either a founder who's either an immigrant or the son or daughter of an immigrant. So I think it would be silly to say one region is better than the other. I mean, it's just, I just doesn't make sense to me. I don't think that way.
I think we're almost winding down. I really appreciate this ride you took us on for the last 20 years. And I'm wondering if you had the chance to, you know, jump on the proverbial time machine and go meet yourself in the late 90s, what would you tell yourself to keep doing? And what would you tell yourself to not do, knowing what you know today?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first question is easy. I mean, I would raise money from external sources. I would try and raise a fund. And because it's very hard to get the amount of capital to affect change in these companies if you have a small pot of money. So, they, you know, a couple hundred grand doesn't do it. So I think knowing what I know now, I would have been a much more, I would have invested a lot more money into a lot more companies, and I would have done whatever the hell it took to try and raise that money to do that. Because I believed in the region and I believed in the growth, but the timing's always the tough part, right? And then the second part, what would I not change? I don't think I'd change anything. Honestly, it's the journey, right? I mean, it's hard to learn from watching others, and there's no substitute for experience. And sometimes as the intrepid explorer, you get arrows in the back when you're going the first one in there. And that's just how it is. I mean, I think mindset wise, that's just how I'm wired. I can't, you know, once a company gets to 50, 100 people and they get bigger and they've got all the regular, it's just not that interesting to me. It's hard being early, but it's also exciting. You know, when you've got 10 people or in a company trying to build something ground changing. And, you know, I look at, you know, Oscar and Danny and, you know, the two of them with four guys typing on a keyboard in this crappy office in the middle of the Union Square to today, I can use my phone to order their delivery app to my house in San Francisco. It's incredible. And that's been 5 years. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like the luckiest guy in the world. You know, I get to meet with the smartest people, much smarter than I am, doing some amazing things and changing things. I love it. In a way, I guess I'm retired because I don't see myself doing anything else. I'll be doing this till I'm, you know, hopefully we'll have this El Valle de los Tercos and I'll be in a wheelchair and I'm 85 and we're still having fun, right?
We'll probably retire before you do.
Yeah.
For sure.
Mike, thank you for joining El Valle de los Tercos. I'm going to say it in a few different versions. Gracias, Che. Gracias, Weon. Gracias, Wei.
Gracias a vos.
Me encantó cuando Mike se soltó y contó las historias de Idiot Mike, de las cosas que se perdió, los tratos que se perdió, las empresas en las que no quiso invertir, porque la verdad es que uno aprende más de esas historias que de las historias de éxito, ¿no?
Sí, y lo importante que es para un inversionista ángel dejar el ego a un lado, que en el mundo de los startups y en el mundo de Silicon Valley parece algo como bastante paradójico, ¿no? Un oxímoron. O sea, el dejar a un lado tu ego. Y él está bien y él está conforme con saber que él nunca va a ser el héroe de la historia, pero saber que jugó alguna parte importante en el resultado.
Y en esa humildad que tiene Mike también me gustó que mencionó muchísimos nombres del quién es quién de Silicon Valley en español, wink wink. Y me alegra que por lo menos la mitad de los que mencionó ya han pasado por este podcast, porque te muestra que hay una comunidad y que hay un grupo de gente, un grupo extendido, grande de gente que ha estado empujando este, lo que podríamos llamar el ecosistema virtual de startups en Latinoamérica. Y fue muy bueno escuchar todas esas historias de todo lo que ha estado pasando hace 20 años, y bueno, ahora son muchas historias de éxito y emprendedores jóvenes en las notas, en las fotos y en la tele, pero todo esto se viene construyendo desde hace mucho tiempo, ¿no?
Exacto, y Mike nos dio un muy buen panorama de cómo empezó todo.
Excellent. Thank you, Fernando.
You're welcome, Diego.
El Valle de los Tercos es el podcast que desde 2016 te trae el quién es quién de Silicon Valley en español cada dos semanas. Estamos en elvalledelostercos.com. Esta temporada disfrutamos los servicios de diseño de la agencia digital Para Todo Hay Fans. Visítalos en paratodohayfans.com. Nuestra comunidad terca chatea por Slack y se reúne por videoconferencia una vez al mes. Súmate con un aporte mensual en patreon.com/tercos. También danos una reseña en Apple Podcasts. Osvaldo desde México dice: excelente contenido y muy grato de escuchar. La música es de Pablo Calvi y su banda de Mont Verlaine. Nuestro editor es Mariano Graglia. Los tercos somos Fernando Franco, el Mexican Dude que conoce a todo el mundo en Silicon Valley, y Diego Graglia, el argentino que es amigo del Mexican Dude. Nos escuchamos en dos semanas en el Valle de los Tercos.